Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your
week in review for Saturday, May 8th. But before we get started on Wall Street's crash and burn, a reminder of some of the things I've written the past 4 months on how I and others saw the year playing out, for better or worse. January 2nd of this year, I wrote, I fall firmly in the camp that the deleveraging process for the consumer is far from over and that spending won't return until the job picture improves, which I just don't see happening in any big way. I also don't see housing coming back significantly in terms of median home prices, owing to the still serious foreclosure issue, as well as a ton of option ARM mortgages that will be resetting at much higher rates later in the year. It's a year that's going to be dominated to a great extent by further issues on the state and local government front, as in revenues won't nearly meet expenses, which will lead to even further layoffs. The big stories are California, New York, and New Jersey. It's about deficits, and this is an issue worldwide. 2010 is about still stagnant, if not falling, wages. This year we'll also see an ever-increasing anger with government and the healthcare debate. This will best be manifested in what is going to be an unruly midterm election. 2009 was about survival. 2010 is going to be about shattered expectations and dreadful pictures on television that will depress the hell out of us. It's going to be about terror attacks around the globe. I then wrote on January 30th, we are far from being out of the woods, and the massive debts that governments in Europe, the United States, and parts of Latin America have been accumulating are finally coming home to roost. I've been writing the past few months that the problem in the case of Greece, for example, is that the European Union doesn't have a mechanism in place for bailing out a corrupt, profligate nation, yet that is exactly what the EU will have to do, or they're all going to hell. And economist Nouriel Roubini's forecast that the Eurozone nations will abandon the euro in 2 or 3 years could be moved up some. PIMCO's Mohamed El Arian wrote in an op-ed for the Financial Times the following regarding Greece and the whole sovereign debt story. Most still think of Greece as an isolated case, just as they did Dubai a few months ago. With time, they will see Greece as part of a much larger investment theme that is a direct outcome of the global financial crisis. The 2008-09 ballooning of sovereign balance sheets in advanced economies is consequential and is becoming an important influence on valuations in many markets around the world. I then wrote on February 13th, if you are optimistic these days, especially about the direction of the United States, the fate of the European Union currency experiment, or some kind of favorable resolution to the rapidly developing Iranian crisis and all the offshoots from it, then you're a better man than me. I see zero reason to be optimistic about much of anything these days. To wit, in Europe, specifically the 16 nations of the 27-nation European Union that use the euro currency, they are trying to come to grips with a debt crisis in Greece and a government in Athens that flat-out lied until recently when confronted about its debt levels. Debt? What debt problem? Greece officials would say when asked just where they stood. I wrote on February 20th, this time it's very different, and it's not just confined to Washington. It's about many of our individual states, let alone much of Europe. It's about an era of profligacy that, in the case of the United States, flourished under both political parties, while in Europe the gimme, gimme, gimme culture first really flourished as leaders ignored rather important long-term issues such as demographics and how exploding entitlements would be paid for. And while today's problems cry out for leadership, what I see that is different is an unwillingness on the part of the people, whether here or overseas, to sacrifice. And it's today, not 10 or 20 years from now, when the sacrifices have to be made. Any political leader bringing up the thought of reduced benefits, for example, would be voted out of office in a heartbeat, if not stoned. It's why I have a real problem with the Tea Party folks. I've read their 17-point platform. Oh, sure, it talks about balancing the budget and reducing spending, but nothing on entitlements. It's a bunch of feel-good malarkey. Since day one of writing this column, going back 11 years, and before that with PIMCO, I have talked about the deficit situation in terms of laying out the facts, but also saying I wasn't going to lose any sleep over them in terms of their impact on the equity markets, and I was right. But you've undoubtedly noticed a shift in my tone the past few weeks, and I'm here to formally say now they matter in terms of market psyche. But what's worrisome is I see no leadership on the issue. We, the people, don't have the guts to deal with pain, but at the same time, we do want to inflict pain on some deserving a ton of it, the bankers, specifically the likes of Goldman Sachs, or bank executives such as in Ireland, who looted their institutions while encouraging irresponsible lending that did nothing but fill their pockets. I then wrote on April 24th regarding Greece. The people are furious and violence seems a certainty down the road. I wrote last week, May 1st. I'm dead serious. If the global economy were to double dip over the next 2 years, forget the whole Euro concept of peace and harmony, you'll have war. And having just come from there, once again it could start in the Balkans, though this time Europe couldn't rely on the U.S. to quell what would start out as a mere firefight. In fact, it looks like I got out of Tirana, Albania in the nick of time. They had massive protests against the government on Friday. Really? How can you possibly be optimistic? And I haven't even begun to bring up the usual hotspots, terror threats, etc. Not one. No, this could be a terror of a different kind. Total anarchy in many parts of the world, all as a result of the economy and the rise of truly ugly figures. We've seen it before, we never learn. So, those are some of the things I've written and discussed thus far in 2010. Just about 12 hours after posting last week's column, we learned just how close we came to fulfilling one of my predictions for the year. That being 2010 is going to be about shattered expectations and dreadful pictures on television that will depress the hell out of us. It's going to be about terror attacks around the world, close quote. While the Times Square bomber failed to come up with a detonator that worked, one expert told the Daily News that the ingredients were indeed there to create a 30-foot fireball that would have sucked out the oxygen from anyone nearby. It could have killed, quote, hundreds, he said. New York City has now seen 11 legitimate plots since 9/11. Any one of these going off as planned would have drastically changed sentiment, which is why I spend so much time on the topic. It's why my hotspots matter. And just as I wrote last Saturday of terror of a different kind, total anarchy in many parts of the world as a result of the economy, we had a small hint of anarchy in Greece, and in the stock market's action on Thursday, financial terror of a kind never seen before, though not of the cyber terror variety that will one day hit us, but self-inflicted, at least 650 points of it. As a guy who has maintained, stocks would finish the year in negative territory, 12% for the Dow and S&P, 6% for NASDAQ. I certainly wasn't that surprised by this week's action, save the 15 minutes from hell. It's rightly been about Greece and the growing realization that not only did the European Union act way too slowly in stemming the growing crisis, but that the joint IMF-EU package, $140 billion plus worth, may not be enough. The Greek parliament was forced to approve a severe austerity plan that will consign the nation to a severe recession as public sector pay was frozen until 2014, the tradition of public sector bonuses, equivalent to 2 months extra pay, was scrapped, state pensions cut or frozen, the retirement age hiked, VAT taxes increased, sin taxes up 10%, and one-off taxes on corporate profits levied. The people deserve it, but it doesn't also mean it's going to be good. The IMF believes the Greek economy will shrink 4% in 2010 and another 2.5% in 2011. Who the hell knows? With Greece's tradition of a strong communist movement, anarchy down the road is indeed possible. And those bombs they like to explode, that normally don't kill anyone until this week, could turn increasingly deadly. This is the Balkans, after all. Anything can happen. It was a week where Bundesbank President Axel Weber said there is a threat of grave contagion effects for other member states in the monetary union and increasing negative feedback loop effects on capital markets. The Weber stopped short of calling for the European Central Bank to begin buying up government bonds or quantitative easing as a way of reassuring the market, a la the U.S. Federal Reserve. Measures that damage the fundamental principles of the currency union and the trust of the people would be mistaken and more expensive for the economy in the longer term, he said. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, prior to Parliament approving its part of the Greek bailout plan, said we're at a fork in the road. This is about nothing less than the future of Europe and with it the future of Germany in Europe and the future of Portugal and Spain and maybe Italy and Ireland. In my musings over the years, I feel like I've nailed quite a few of the big picture items. I also have that motto of wait 24 hours that has held me in good stead. I'm not a trader. I'm a long-term investor and thinker. In preparing the opening of this column, I cited PIMCO's Mohamed El Arian and his thoughts from the week ending January 30th. For those of you who follow the markets closely this past week, what you should find striking is that he said the exact same thing the past few days. Of course, he's been spot on thus far, as he re-emphasized in various interviews and op-ed pieces that 2010 was a year of, quote, year of sovereign risk, now regional and on the verge of going global, adding that as global demand falls, this is also deflationary. So how does it all end? It's going to play out slowly, at least for now. You may get a positive policy pronouncement or two from the ECB, for example, but you are going to see more Greek-like stress among the people. Should Greece be forced to restructure its debts or, heaven forbid, default, some of the larger European banks in France and Germany in particular would be forced to take massive hits to their balance sheets, fueling a new round of bailouts at a time when Europe's recovery is stagnating. But let's look at the U.S. economy. The economic data was great this week. March consumption was up 0.6%. Regarding my opening comments, I've been wrong on the consumer, though I maintain that won't be the case the rest of the year. Construction spending was better than expected. The April ISM figure on manufacturing was 60.4, outstanding, and the April jobs report released Friday was solid, 290,000 jobs created, and totally ignored amidst the Euro crisis. But while President Obama crowed about the improved picture, the way the numbers work out, the unemployment rate rose from 9.7 to 9.9% as more people re-enter the labor market. Here I just have to get off track a little to bring up a thought you won't yet find anywhere else. Come the November midterm elections and the campaign beforehand, the unemployment rate is going to be a huge focus. You know that already. But what no one is talking about, even as they should be panicking in the corridors of the White House, is a simple fact. The last employment report we'll have before the November 2nd vote is going to be October 1st. Data for September. The labor report is always released the first Friday of the month, and that's November 5th. So you see where I'm headed. We just had April's employment data. Thus, there are only five more months to get the unemployment rate down substantially, say under what will become a big psychological barrier, 9%, and that doesn't seem possible. Some, such as economist Mark Zandi, say we could be stuck back over 10% for some time to come. It's a little like the situation in the 1992 presidential election. The data later proved that the U.S. economy was in recovery, not recession, but it was too late for Bush 41. It's going to be interesting for the Obama administration and its attempts to limit the damage in terms of lost seats, whether or not an extra month or two in hindsight will have made a difference. Then again, if the crisis in Europe really takes hold, its impact on the U.S. economy will be such that the preceding will be irrelevant. The Democrats would get crushed. And one thing that isn't helping is that for all the crowing, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, when it comes to the GDP data, this is 1 week recovery. I also have to address the huge headwinds the United States faces when it comes to the finances of state and local government. You had a great example this week in New York, where Governor David Patterson talked of 100,000 union employees being forced to take one unpaid day off a week in lieu of layoffs. Well, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, in releasing his budget, said that if police were off the table, and after the latest terror attempt, they definitely are, then he'll have to lay off 11,000 elsewhere, including 6,400 city teachers. Turning overseas, the fate of China's economy becomes critically important to the rest of the world these days. While the likes of strategist Mark Faber and short seller Jim Chanos continue to talk of a crash, others, including yours truly, believe China will weather its housing bubble, which is largely confined to the major metropolitan areas. The government continues to put new restrictions on both the banks and raising reserve requirements a third time, as well as individual home buyers. China is also getting close to finally instituting a property tax, which would be a drag on prices, but a far more predictable income stream for the government. So can the government engineer a soft landing from 11.9% GDP heights? The World Bank maintains China will grow 9.5% this year. A leading Chinese government economist says 9% is, quote, no big problem. As reported by Sophie Leung of Bloomberg,
Quote, China's relatively under-leveraged household sector as the minimum deposit for buying first homes is at least 20%, while second home purchases need 40%, Goldman economist Michael Buchanan said. China's household debt is only 22% of the nation's GDP, while mortgage debt is 14%, he wrote. By contrast, Federal Reserve figures show $10.3 trillion of U.S. mortgage debt outstanding at the end of 2009, the equivalent of 70% of GDP. So 14% in China, 70% in the U.S. What we do know is that China's stock market has already fallen 18% this year. It's been a long time since there was a bubble in equities. For the two or three readers left who have ignored my musings over 11 years that Wall Street is nothing more than a casino, he should have finally been converted on Thursday. As of this writing, we still don't know what happened in the 700 or so point downdraft in 15 minutes. Everyone on the street has their theories, but regardless, this much is clear. Wall Street needs mega regulation. High-frequency trading, despite the pleadings of its adherents to the contrary, is destructive, not helpful. I'm really tired of the, quote, we supply liquidity when no one else will BS. As if they graduated from college and said, I really want to do something honorable and beneficial to society. I'm getting into high-frequency trading. Oh, Bob, we're so proud of you. As options monsters John Najarian said on CNBC Thursday after the markets closed, it's not a fair game. Bang on, John. The leading commodities trader, Mark Fisher, told the network in a rare interview that he wanted to send a warning to everyone. Thursday's action was straight out of the Matrix. Even Lloyd Blankfein, earlier in the week in an interview with Charlie Rose, said of Wall Street as a whole, you could call it a casino, but if it is, it's a very socially important casino. Oh, please. The bottom line is that Thursday's action crushed confidence further, and the little guy has every reason to stay away. As for the final figures this memorable week, the Dow Jones had its worst week since March of last year, down 5.7%, while the S&P 500 lost 6.4% and NASDAQ 7.9%. For the latter, its worst performance since November 2008. All three indices are now down fractionally on the year. So what you've seen the past 2 weeks, both negative, is a classic example of what I've been talking about for almost 600 columns now. You have to try and separate the fundamentals from market psychology or sentiment. The economic and corporate data the past few weeks has been outstanding. The sentiment sucks. I'll be back with you Saturday, May 15th.